You, my friend, are listening to the Melrose Place podcast, where we rewatch, recap, and analyze every single episode of that hit 90s TV series, Melrose Place.
I'm Jenny.
And I am Dan Hill.
Let's get started.
Melrose birthday.
Oh, that's right.
We're a year old.
1 year. Seems like only yesterday.
Can't believe it. Season 2, episode 23, Otherwise Engaged. Air date March 2nd, 1994. And this was a historic episode.
Wow. We are on a freight train and the things that are happening are just going crazy at the speed of light.
It's nuts, man. Everybody says this is the episode that really, really sends you into what Melrose Place is known for.
And so much happens in just one episode.
Hell of a lot.
It's like there are so many huge reveals and like very big plot lines that are just like exploding.
Yeah,
it's
you kept saying like, all right, this was over now.
Yeah, I kept thinking like, end of the episode. And it's like, oh my God, there's more. End of the episode. Oh my God, there's more.
Yeah, it just kept on coming.
So let's get into it. We start at the beach house.
Surfing, seagulls.
People running on the beach.
And then we get a close-up shot of some eggs, bacon, and OJ. And Sydney is cooking up Breakfast of Champions. This looks so good.
It's a stark contrast from the last time she made breakfast for Michael, which, if you remember, was one of those microwavable meals and Eggo waffles. This is like homemade, looking good. She really knows her man and she wants to meet his needs.
She's on her home game right now. And she has a card. I thought it was like a thank you card or something.
Yeah.
Or like a letter to him.
So she's preparing all of this food to put on this tray, which she brings into the bedroom. And she surprises Michael with breakfast in bed. And on the tray is a card addressed to Michael Mancini.
Mm-hmm. And she like waltzes in there. She's like, good morning, Michael. I made you breakfast and why don't you take a look at this? And he's like, what is this shit?
He opens it, and guys, it's a wedding invitation.
Oh, my God.
What?
Yeah, I can't believe she is already like he quote-unquote proposed the last episode, and she's already like, I've made invitations.
Yeah, things go so quickly, and he takes one look at it, crumples it, and throws it on the ground.
And calls her a slut.
Well,
right?
He says, you are one stupid slut that's crossed the line, and I don't want to see your face anymore.
But you know what? this right here is getting played out for me. Because he is always like, you stupid bitch, you get the hell away from me, don't touch me. And then she goes, Michael, you don't want to cross me because I'll call the cops. And then he's always like, okay, sorry, Sid. Like, this game is, it's a little old for me. Old hat.
I agree. I mean, it's been going on for several episodes, them establishing this kind of a relationship. And we've said it so many times before. They are good for each other.
They're great.
Sydney actually says this. She says, Michael, when are you going to realize we are good for each other? I'm going to take care of you. We belong together. And they kind of do. They are a diabolical duo.
We belong together.
It's true.
She says this to Michael. She goes, Jane warned me how cranky you get in the morning. So I'm going to give you a pass.
Oh my! It's like, how crazy is this situation? But then, of course, she, you know, does the same old thing where she's like, after I go to the police and after I tell them about what you did and how you were involved in Kimberly's death, then you're going to be locked up forever. So a life with me is going to be a lot better than having no life at all, locked up in jail, don't you think? And of course, Michael is like, yeah, okay, Sydney, you're right. And it's just like, again, like you said, all right, we get it. This is played out. Let's shake it up. Yeah.
And Michael acts out again and flips over his breakfast.
He does. And it was a really nice homemade breakfast. Just goes to waste. He flips the whole thing over onto the floor.
I really wanted to eat it. I'm an eggs guy in the morning.
Oh, I know.
I like my eggs.
I'm a fresh squeezed orange juice kind of person, and that orange juice looked bomb.
Yeah, man. What are you doing?
So next up, we go to D&D, and Allison is talking to Amanda about how she needs to eyeball these figures of a report. And then Amanda like segues into saying, well, I'm going to eyeball those figures right after I eyeball this ring.
Yeah. And I guess we're supposed to at first think she's like, ooh, la, la. But really, she wants to eyeball it to like hate on it hardcore.
I mean, wouldn't you, Dan? You're the one that calls it a can opener. It is awful.
Shrapnel.
It's the worst. I don't know how anybody could pass this off as an engagement ring.
And we get, I'll post a picture of it on Instagram, but we got a really nice shot of it finally on her hand, and it looks bad.
Yeah, and Amanda's like, well, excuse me for saying so, Allison, but this is just a temporary ring, correct? I mean,
may I be blunt?
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, do you even have to ask that, Amanda? You're going to be freaking blunt no matter what. And she does ask her, hey, are you going to get a new one? And it really seems like this has not occurred to Allison at all.
Yeah.
Like, she probably thought that ring was great. And until Amanda said anything, it's like all of a sudden she's like self-conscious about the ring.
It's like when you drink Diet Coke for like 2 years and you talk yourself into thinking it's good. And then you have a regular Coke.
And it's like crack.
Yeah, she never had a regular Coke. And she's like, what is this?
So during this conversation, Bruce comes up to Amanda and Allison. And I guess he's like the big wig boss. Mm-hmm. We've seen him a couple of times in other episodes. And he heard through the grapevine that Allison got engaged. And he says that it is a tradition that he and his wife takes out the employees and their new fiance
their
to celebrate.
Sig-offs.
Yeah, exactly. The sig-offs to celebrate their engagement. And he wants to take Allison and Billy out.
And this is strange because Allison's like, sure, we'd love to. And he's like, great. I'll make the details and someone will let you know where it is and what time.
No, he goes, how about tomorrow? And she's like, great, that works for me. Wonderful. I'll have my secretary tell you when and where.
Yeah. That I feel like that just doesn't happen anymore.
Maybe not. I mean, I think that they're supposed to establish that he's like such a big wig that he can't even do his own social engagements. He has someone else schedule it for him.
Well, this made me cringe what happens next.
Oh!
She is so socially awkward.
I know. This is another case for her having Asperger's.
It's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode.
It really is. Okay. So what is it? Dan is talking about after this happens with Bruce and Allison, Bruce starts to walk away and Amanda is like, oh, excuse me, Bruce. I'm not the type of person that likes to put my personal life on display here at work, but I am seeing somebody and I'm very interested in you meeting him. I'd really like you to make his acquaintance.
And then he looks at her like, wow, thanks for putting me on the spot. Why don't you come along?
Right. It's so weird. It's like she's inviting herself on this little double date.
Guys. Bruce, not do this.
Bruce even said this is a tradition that we do for those couples who have just gotten engaged.
Yeah.
It just seems like a very desperate power play by Amanda.
So desperate.
And so transparent.
And she's like, it was basically like,
can I? Me too.
Can I go?
And of course, Allison is mortified. And like you said, Bruce is like, okay, you freak. Yeah, I guess you can come.
This is the equivalent My mother used to get mad as shit at me for doing this in front of other families.
Like, what would you do?
We'd be at church or something, and, like, you know, the kids would try to, like, arrange a sleepover or, like, come over, mm-hmm. right? And I would always, like, ask my mom in front of the person if they could come over to our house. Or we do vice versa. And my mom would be like, don't ever ask if someone could come over and bring them right up to me.
Well, that's a surefire way that your mom's probably going to say, yeah.
Yeah, because then she can't be a bad guy and be like, no, Colin can't come over.
Why? I would. I would say, I'm sorry. Like, if you've got something going on, you could be like, oh, Daniel, we're just too busy tonight. Colin, how about a different time?
But then it's the whole like, no, we're not. Mom, remember, you said we're not doing anything. And then she's got to look little Colin in the face and be like, I just don't want you to come over. So this is the boss.
Well, I guess so.
This is that scenario.
Next scene, we head over to the hospital where Matt is doing his daily work. I really am perplexed as to what Matt does on a day-to-day basis. He's like really floating around. He's not in
he's got a specific office.
He's usually like walking the halls. And again, he's walking the halls and he sees Sydney.
Mm.
So the moment he sets eyes on her, he's like, oh God, get away, get away, get away.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, Matt, just the man I was looking for. And she like holds her arm out to hand him something. And Matt's first reaction is, no thanks. I don't give a fuck what you have.
I don't want anything to do with you. You are crazy. And you're blackmailing me.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, not to worry, Matt. It's actually a wedding invitation. Me and Michael are getting married. And Matt's like, does Michael know this?
Michael know about this shit? Because I know for a fact he fucking hates you. He talks to me about it daily. And I'm like, yo, who's hand delivering wedding invites?
Sydney is a loser and she doesn't know anything about wedding etiquette. And she's like, well, and then this point is proven further when she says, well, Matt, I'm really counting on you. You need to be there with Michael to be his best man.
And Matt is like, I don't think it works like that, sweetie. I think the groom picks his best men and I wouldn't be one of them.
Well, either way, it's settled. They're getting married, and Matt's the best man because that is how Sydney wants
it. That's how she wants it. The last time I hand-delivered an invitation to a party, I was in, like, third grade. Well, hey, come to my birthday at Flickr's.
What's Flickr's?
It was an arcade.
Oh.
Chatham Mall. What's up, Maryland? Chatham Mall off Route 40.
Oh, gosh.
It's called Flickr's. Love that place.
Okay. So next scene, we're with Joe, and she's shooting a horrible fashion shoot.
Back to work? Already? She's really throwing herself in the
mix.
And
I mean, like, how long ago was this? A day? 2 days?
Yeah. And she's already got a gig?
I don't know. But I don't know for who, because...
Something is going on. She's like, yeah, give it to me. I need you to be... Be more. I don't know. I can't even recreate how fucked up this was.
It's a group of like four or five girls in these like weird macrame outfits, and they're like
the wind's blowing on.
Yeah,
them.
It's like it's a desert background, and they're like one girl keeps holding her stomach like she's pregnant, and it's very weird. I don't know what they're trying to sell, but you know, Joe is like telling them to work the camera and. Go, you got it. Make love to the camera. Yeah. And then immediately, that's Dan feigning barf motions.
Yeah.
And she runs into the bathroom to throw up.
And immediately, Jenny was on the couch and was like, she's pregnant.
Well, that's the only explanation. So she comes out and she's like, gosh, flu season, it's really got me.
And this guy who looks like Seth Green...
He really does.
He comes out in this like jean shirt and black like leathery vest.
Like a cargo vest.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, are you okay? Something's going on with you.
And then Joe promptly faints into his arms.
Not before saying, just keep a barf bag handy, will ya? She's just going to keep rolling. And then she just passes out, and we're both like, yup, pregnant as hell.
Yeah. So next up, we're back at the hospital where Michael and Matt are kind of sequestered into, I don't know if this is like a common area where they keep like the one computer for the hospital and like the copying machine.
Yeah.
But Matt's working on it, and they're talking about Sydney and how she's completely out of her mind. And
have you noticed that they talk so freely about the illegal actions they've yes. done in the hospital
all the time?
Like, anyone could walk in and hear this. And Matt, on several occasions, is like, hey, Michael, I'm the one who changed your records. I could go to prison and lose my job.
They don't even talk in code or anything. It's just like blatantly as loud as they can. And not even in like closed quarters. It's a lot of times in a busy hallway where lots of
people. Yeah. And Michael's just walking past him. Better keep your mouth shut. Then any coworker at this hospital is like, walks past Matt and is like, what do you need to keep your mouth shut about?
Like, what's wrong with you guys?
Are you guys okay? What records is he talking about? Yeah. Let's look into this.
It's weird. It is really weird. Matt is kind of having fun with this, and even Michael is like, do I detect a note of pleasure in your voice? And Matt's pretty much like, yeah, bitch. Like, you are a jerk. You've ruined so many people's lives, and this is what you deserve.
Yeah, Matt, he's like, you don't have a choice, Michael. I think you got to marry her. Yeah, all right?
You got to. And then he's like, well, it's easy for you. I risk my ass. And again, we have the same conversation that we've been having with Michael and Matt all the time. It's always like, who's in too deep the most?
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh, Michael, you are the one that killed somebody by drinking and driving. But then, Matt, you went against the code of the hospital and changed the blood alcohol levels. And again, this is another storyline that's like, enough already, okay?
Yeah, we get it. Sydney owns you.
Yeah, and we're getting really, this is hammered into our heads. So I'm really excited for something to shake this up.
And Michael, he leaves this scene with Matt like, geez, you're a real asshole. And it's like, Michael, you have been nothing but a piece of shit to Matt ever since he changed the records. Okay?
I know.
Like,
Matt
nothing.
Really put his whole reputation and job on the line to do that for him.
Yeah. And Michael, he's like laying in bed like, shut the fuck up, Matt. Hey, Matt, get over here.
Even thinking like, hey, if something comes down to it and it is exposed, he's going to like say that Matt is in love with him and that like he's got these horrible plans.
And Michael always does this. He's always like, geez, what's your problem? What's gotten you all drawn up? You're a dick. You're the biggest dick.
Oh, man. It's so true. Okay. So next scene. This is a good one, guys. Sid is dropping off a wedding invitation to Jane.
And Jane is all of us in this scene.
What is... I mean, this is insane to me.
She opens the door and Jane is immediately like, oh, God, like, what do you want, Sid?
And Sydney's like, look, Jane, I'm not doing this to hurt you, but I thought you should know Michael and I are getting married.
And she's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, like Jane is in complete disbelief. She's like, you cannot be serious. I can't even believe this. And
Sid's like, we just want your blessing.
Like, what? This is the craziest thing I've ever seen.
It is crazy. And that's why Jane offers, she says, you need psychiatric attention.
Which is very true.
Yeah.
And it's like Sydney's another one of these people, like Michael, that's like, geez, why can't you just be happy for me? And it's like, well, I don't know, Sydney, because you're marrying my freaking ex-husband.
Yeah.
And you've been in like cahoots with him the entire time to ruin me.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why.
What's her problem? I'm just marrying
you
a guy I love.
You actively tried to like sabotage a good relationship I was in. She's just terrible.
She is the worst, man. She is the worst. Now we are off to Amanda and Jake. And Amanda is explaining to Jake, like, hey, you got to come to this dinner because it's with my boss and because I said so.
And of course, Jake is like, okay, I'm not into dinner with bosses. I'm not that kind of a guy. And then Amanda's like, look, I'm not going to let Allison use her marriage to get ahead of me. So maybe I need to find a partner who can play the game.
Yeah. And she's like, just sit there and look good. And she's like, oh, don't pull this reverse sexism shit on me.
Amanda is insane, too. She is such a bitch.
Total bitch.
I mean, I think Amanda could be the bitch of the week every single week.
Yeah.
But man.
Just to tell somebody, just sit there and look pretty. You know?
Like, F you. But then Jake likes it. He's like, oh, okay, well, you got it, Missy. And yeah. It's like, ew.
She made a bitch out of him. And he's like, do you get everything you want? And she's like, well, let's see. And then, like, they bang. It's like, what the hell?
It's a very strange relationship dynamic. Yeah. Next scene, we're with Joe. She's at a doctor's office because she fainted. They don't know what's wrong with her. Mm-hmm. And the doctor has figured out the culprit.
Ding, ding, ding. Pregnant.
Yeah. And you know what I found really weird? The doctor is like, well, do you know who the father is?
No doctor would ask that.
Why does that matter?
No one would assume it. Yeah. That question does not get asked today.
I mean, maybe that's a 90s moment, man, that's overstepping your bounds.
Hey, you're pregnant. Where's the dad?
It's like, maybe we don't have a dad.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like when, who went into possibly get an abortion?
Sandy.
No, Sandy already had her abortion. She was telling a story about abortion.
Oh, who got the abortion?
I don't know. No, she was, Jane. Jane with the miscarriage.
Oh, because she miscarried.
Well, she was getting...
She was going to get an abortion. Yeah. Then she didn't. Then she miscarried.
Right. But even then, the doctor overstepped their boundaries with Jane and was like, does the husband know that you're running an abortion?
Oh!
It's like, dude, bitch, it's my body.
And that wasn't that long ago either.
Yeah. My body, my choice.
Agreed.
So Joe is totally pregnant. There's a close-up shot on her, like, just shocked. And we head straight to commercial after that. And, I mean... Jenny, if you were pregnant, you found out you were pregnant by the guy who you killed on a boat, like, how do you take that?
I don't even know.
I would just cry, right?
A lot. Like, in a corner by myself.
You're like, what the hell do I do?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a really tough decision, and I think it's got to be... A lot has to do with your financial situation and what your career is like and how you're feeling about, like, do I even want a child?
Yeah.
And then you've got to think that kid's dad is the person that you killed.
Yeah, at some point you're probably going to have to explain that to old Junior.
Well, I don't know. It's something that I think... I can't even speak to because I've never been in that situation.
Yeah.
Thank God I never killed somebody on a boat and had to have their baby.
Yeah. Yet.
One can dream.
So, in other news, Sydney found a guy to marry them in one day.
One day, guys.
Which is really impressive.
And Michael's like, come on, Sydney. You don't really want to go through with this. I don't love you. I don't even like you. Which is like,
and he's in this badass like robe too, just chilling.
You've got to wonder too, what is Sydney's motivation for all of this? I mean, she's a human just like anybody else, and she wants, I'm sure, some kind of love and reciprocal romance from another person. And this is someone who obviously does not care for her, does not want her in their life, but she's continuously trying to insert herself and now making him marry her.
Well, I think Sid's motivation always is to be better than Jane. Always.
Yeah, you're right.
From the start, right when she got on this show, she was trying to be Jane. She wanted to be a designer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything that she does is to get back at Jane or beat Jane. And by having Michael, she is Jane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, she says, Michael, I need money for a wedding dress. And Michael is basically like, you're insane. That's hilarious. I'm not giving you any money. Why don't you just wear Jane's old dress? It's in the back of her closet anyway.
And she's like, that is a great idea.
Yeah. Sydney actually thinks this is an awesome idea. And she says, well, it's a family heirloom. It was my grandmother's.
I have every right to it as she does.
That's what she said.
And Michael kind of likes it.
He's like, all right, you go and get it.
He's like, go ahead and try it. Jane's a tough cookie, man. She threw a bunch of china at me when I tried to take stuff. So we leave that scene, and Sydney is on a mission now to get that dress.
We head over to Melrose Place, where Jo is walking to her apartment, and she meets Jake right there in the courtyard. She's walking up to her door, and then she has to run into her apartment to start barfing in the bathroom because she is overcome with sickness.
And even Jake is surprised that she's back to work.
Yeah, he's like, it's been like a day.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Got no quit, huh? And she runs back up to the apartment. Jake follows, and Jo has to come clean to him, basically.
Well, she has nobody to confide in about this, and this is a huge life-altering decision.
Yes, she does. She can confide in her. She's the maid of honor of Allison's wedding.
I guess you're right.
Why don't you go talk to your BFF, who doesn't give a shit about you?
Well, maybe because she might know that deep down.
Yeah.
And she's not one to, you know, tell her problems to anybody. But she does tell Jake that she's pregnant and that she wants an abortion and that she just cannot have Reed's child.
Yeah. Which is sad, man. I get it. It's tough. You have this person who tried to, like, kidnap you and beat you up and you know, change your life completely and point a gun at your face and almost hit you with an axe and kick a knife out of your hand, make you pee and poop yourself in a trap door.
Well, it's all nature versus nurture, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I guess so.
So next up, Allison and Billy are looking at rings.
Bling, bling. Allison gets one on her finger and it is much better than the can opener.
It's a 2-carat diamond, and the salesperson says it's $8,900.
$8,500.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
You really taking notice.
Really took note. That's a lot.
Especially 94? For the nine. Yeah.
Woo! That's a lot. Yeah.
That's a pretty penny. And Allison is smitten, and she even says, I'd really like to wear the ring tonight to the dinner. Can we put something down so we can take it away?
And Billy's like, can I have a word?
God.
Oh, you fucker. Like,
he's
just
a little sniveling him. Like, Allison.
I'd like to have a word. Whenever Allison is trying to buy something nice, he's always there to like snatch her away. When she tried to buy that car, we're leaving. Come on. You can't buy shit. It's like, dude, Allison's got the badass job. She's got the money. You still...
Right. I think he's still out of work, right? We don't know. Did he get his job back at Escapade?
He's back at Escapade.
Oh, I guess he is because
Celia was pissed at him.
Yeah. You're right. So he says to Allison, is this connected to the fact that we're having dinner with your boss tonight?
Yeah. And he's like, we can't afford it. And Allison looks at him and she says, you know what? Sometimes you can be a real jerk.
Well, it's true. So the next scene, we see Sydney going to Jane's door. And can you believe it? She still has a key.
And I think this is a continuity error. Because didn't Jane change the locks? when they beat the shit out of Michael.
But then they became friends again, remember? Because Jane came clean about everything, about how Michael had the hookers that went over to Robert.
Because Robert, I think, had the locks changed after he kicked the shit out of Michael.
I think so, too. But we can assume they're sisters. Things were good. Maybe Jane gives Sydney a key to access her apartment when she's not there.
Yeah, you're right.
And so she does. She goes into Jane's apartment, puts her purse on a desk, and goes into her closet and finds the wedding dress.
And this is while Jane is at work.
Right, this is midday. Sydney gets it out of the closet and then starts taking it out of the the garment bag, which is like, just take the dress and leave.
Yeah, but just take it.
She wants to revel in this moment and look at every accessory, every piece, and she just starts kind of like taking it all out of the closet.
And this dress, sorry, Jane, but it's horrible.
Oh my God. The lace, the beading,
It looks like someone just sewed a bunch of doilies together.
It's so bad. The ruffles. Really bad. I don't know how this could ever have been fashion forward.
It looked like the dress in Beetlejuice that Gina Davis gets resurrected back in. And she comes in it like all dead. You know what I'm saying? And it like rises up.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
It might be the same dress.
It might be. That's a very good comparison. Da,
da. And like their jaws fall off and shit.
Now that's a good movie.
The Maitlands.
Yeah, so that dress, I don't know how anybody could look their best in it, but okay.
So Sid puts that motherfucker on.
Okay, so next up, we are with Jake and Joe. They're at the abortion clinic, and Joe's in talking with a counselor, and she comes out to tell Jake that, hey, I have a 24-hour waiting period. We have to wait.
24 hours.
24 hours.
And Jake's like, so when? And Joe's like, 24 hours.
That really irked you.
It got me so bad. She walks directly out and says, well, I've got a 24-hour wait period. So when is it? Jake, I knew you were slow, but you did pass your GED. Why don't you go ahead and infer that it's 24 hours? Okay.
So they're walking out of the clinic together, and Joe is kind of getting vibes from Jake that maybe he's not very approving of her decision to have the abortion.
Yeah, and she's like, Jake, I'm getting a sense. What's going on? What do you think about it?
Spit it out. Tell me what you're thinking. And Jake says, well, you're making a really important decision. You know, think about it seriously. It's not like returning a dress. That's like, you think that she doesn't know that?
Yeah.
And then he even goes so far as to say, you know what? You don't have to tell the kid at all about his real dad. Tell him I'm the father.
And it's, man, look, what, just lie to him all his life? That's what Jake is insinuating. Yeah. Hey, why don't you lie to your son or daughter their entire life and tell them that I'm the dad?
And thank God Joe came back with, well, you want to just replace the kid you already lost? Which is true. You guys remember, Jake has a biological son, and he signed the papers to give his rights away to that child.
And what would Amanda think of this? Oh, hey, me and Joe talked. I'm going to be this kid's dad.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. Jake, you jumped the gun, my friend.
Agreed.
So now we're going to cut back to Sydney putting on that dress.
Oh, this was so good, guys. So she's in Jane's bedroom. She has everything on, the veil, the dress, the shoes. Mm-hmm. She's got them all on. And of
Jane
course,
Jane is going to come home early from work.
And she walks in the door and sees Sydney's purse sitting right there on her desk. And she knows, oh man, Sydney's here in my apartment. She runs into the bedroom and sees, beholding the sight of Sydney in her wedding dress.
And she's like, what are you doing, Sid?
Right. So a huge fight ensues. We learn that this is Grandma's dress. And Jane basically takes Sydney and kicks her out and is like, take the dress off.
She's like, give me the dress. And Sydney's like, no, I'm taking the dress and I'm going and I'm going to get married to Michael. And she's like, you're not going to leave this house. And like, there's a rush for the door. They're outside in the courtyard. And I knew it. I knew this scene was coming.
You did call it.
Yeah. I was like, I think there is a pool fight and someone's in a wedding dress. I vaguely remembered it. And I mean, they are, there's some physicality that Jane is trying to like pull the dress like off of Sydney in the courtyard, and they're going back and forth, and it's inevitable. We knew it. They are headed for the pool.
And they go right in, both of them.
And they're fighting, and like they both come up out of the water. Sydney screaming at Jane, like, you ruined it. Oh my God. And Jane is like, Jane is pumped. She's like, she's trying to kill her.
I mean, no.
She thinks she's trying to kill her.
Sydney was taking Jane's head and holding it under the water.
Yeah. And then, like, we get a shot of Matt, this ant view of Matt, like, rushing to the pool, like, trying to pull one out. And he's like, are you guys okay? And Sydney is like, she's trying to kill me. She ruined the dress. And
Jane has a great line.
Greatest line of the episode, man. Maybe the series. Who knows? We haven't seen it. But she's like, you ruined the dress. And Jane says, on the contrary, Sid, it's now tailor-made for the Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, sick burn.
Got her. And I got some, apparently, that, what I'm getting from our Melrose Place podcast Facebook group is that that was one, they had one take on that, on the dress, the fight in the pool. And
really?
And coming out. Yeah. That was all one take.
They killed it.
Because, I mean, think about it. Like, how many of those ugly-ass wedding dresses
got? You'd think that maybe they may have two or three. I mean, you know that, working in props and costumes.
Yeah. But,
there's,
I mean,
many, many films and TV shows will have multiple of...
But to restage that scene will take a long time. They've all got to dry. They got to get their hair, makeup better. And have another change for both Sid and the wetness of the pool. They got to dry the whole outside.
Yeah, so it's just better to keep on budget and schedule to just do it in one take.
Get it all in one.
Well,
but it looked good.
Hats off. It looked great.
It looked good. Their leap to the pool was good. Like, it was very well staged combat.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I have to agree.
That was freaking awesome. And how far we've come in this series to where that type of shit is happening.
Like, on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
We're seeing stuff like this all the time.
I fucking love it, man.
Yeah, it's great.
And I don't care who knows it. I'm like, Melrose Place! I go to work, and people are like, so what are you guys going to do? I'm like, oh, well, I got to watch some MP with my wife. We love it.
Yeah,
it's the
great.
Shit. It is the shit.
Next scene, we are at dinner with Bruce and his wife. And may I ask, why does Bruce's wife look like a washed-up Marilyn Monroe? I mean, she's got the 7-year itch white dress on, the crazy like blowout that's like looks like kind of like a sick version of Marilyn's hair.
I don't remember her well.
Oh my God, if it comes up here while we're watching it, you got to see it. So we're at dinner, and Billy and Allison are there. Amanda's there, but there's a vacant chair. Jake is nowhere to be found.
Jake is gone.
So they're all waiting to order because they don't want to be rude and start dinner without their member, the other member of their party.
Right.
And Amanda's like, well, you know, I think we probably shouldn't wait any longer. He probably got hung up at work.
Hell yeah, and Billy is like, man, you know Jake doesn't have a job.
He did not say it like that, though, Dan. He was like, oh, Amanda, I thought that Jake was out of work right now. Like, he innocently didn't mean to make it look like a poor reflection on Amanda. He just has no wherewithal of, like, this was the lie. Let's try to maintain it.
Yeah.
And then he was like, and then Amanda says, oh, how little you know about Jake.
Jake has, like, 10 jobs.
He is a very busy man.
Jake hates money. Oh, she does look like Marilyn. She's in a Marilyn Monroe dress.
That's what I said. It's a 7-year itch dress.
So they're at the bistro and just yucking it up.
Did you just see Billy's face?
He is so disgusted with Amanda. But the waiter rolls up and he's like, hello, I hate to break it to you. Jake sends his regards. He will not be making it to dinner.
And Amanda is very upset, but she conceals it well. Was there anything else that went along with the message? No, ma'am, I'm sorry. That's all that we got. He just said that he couldn't make it.
And at this point, if you're a normal human being, you say, would you excuse me? I'm going to try to place a phone call at the restaurant. Or you just get up and leave.
Right.
You're going to go home now. You're not going to sit there and continue dinner. I mean, for all you know, Jake has got his leg broken on a bike. You know? For Amanda to just, like, sit there and, like, take it is another case in point that she has Asperger's. And that she just seriously doesn't really give a shit about Jake's well-being. She's just mad that a placeholder wasn't there.
Yeah. And she even said as much.
Yeah.
Sit there and look pretty. That's all she cares about. Could be anybody.
And Jake couldn't even do that.
So, it's at the end of the evening, and Jake has been with Joe all night because, of course, Joe needed the support, and that's why he calls the restaurant and says that he can't go.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake is leaving Joe's apartment. They're at the door. And Jake kisses Joe.
Yeah. And we went back and forth and watched this a couple times because it looked like a straight up lip-to-lip kiss.
It looked to me, it looks like a lip-to-lip kiss.
I think it was sort of on the side.
It does not come off that way.
Yeah.
If they are completely platonic, why are they kissing on the lips? It is really weird. And, of course, this is the exact moment that Amanda's coming home from dinner and she witnesses the whole scene and sees them kiss. And then you even called this out. Joe goes into her apartment and then Jake turns around and he is grinning ear to ear.
Yeah, he is pretty stoked. Jake gets off on being, like, helpful and being there for people. So he's really, really feeling himself that he, like, took care of Joe in her time of need. But he runs up on Amanda, and he's like, Amanda, come on.
Amanda's basically like, look, Jake, we're through. I can't believe you did this to me. You made me look like a fool at dinner. And Jake is trying to plead his case.
You don't understand.
She's going through a tough time. I had to be there for her. Well, now you can. You can be there for her all the time because we're done.
Yikes. So they are broken up.
Next scene, of course, Amanda is not one that shies away from confrontation. She goes right to Joe's apartment the very next day to confront her about what's going on with Jake.
And you know what I don't like? I hate it when you're watching a show and there's a confrontation at the door, and, like, you open the door, and then the person you're fighting with just enters. Like, that doesn't happen. If you're standing in the door, no one is going to walk their way in.
I don't know. Amanda Woodward does, and she's done it a lot.
If you've opened the door ever, does someone just waltz in? Never. That's never happened to me in my entire life.
They needed to do it for the blocking, okay?
Yeah.
So Amanda waltzes in and she's like, let me cut right to the chase, Joe. Everything I've done for you, and now you make a play for my boyfriend?
Sounds so childish. My boyfriend?
But, okay.
You're trying to steal my boyfriend.
Let's see it from Amanda's viewpoint for just a moment. All she's seen is Jake and Joe kissing on the lips. Joe ditches her to go have dinner, to go be with Joe.
Yeah.
Does not look good. No. Now, keep in mind, Amanda has put up anywhere from $300,000 to $400,000 to get her out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But she got it back.
She got it. Well, we can assume that she got it back. But that is a lot to put on the line for somebody. So, yeah, it does make sense that she's pissed.
Yeah. So Joe is taking it all in stride, and she finally has to come clean and just say, look, Amanda, I'm pregnant, and Jake was helping me through that. And
it's Reed's baby, and I don't know what to do, and I didn't even want to tell Jake, but I did, and I didn't even want to tell you because I didn't want anybody to know, and now everyone is going to know. Thanks a lot.
Right. And then Amanda, she's basically like, I don't know what to say. And Joe delivers a badass line, and she's like, how about goodbye?
Well, before Amanda just looks at Joe and says, is that the truth? And then Joe says, you know what, Amanda? You're the only person who would think to ask that at this time.
Because you have Asperger's.
And then Amanda says, well, I don't know what to say. How about goodbye?
Right. How about goodbye? And I love it when Amanda gets put in her place and has to just like
take it.
And waltz off. Remember that one episode where she was just getting it from all directions? She was getting like effed. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's good. But you know what? She's not a sore loser. That's the one thing about Amanda. When she realizes she's wrong, she's not one to fight against that. Like, for instance, the very next scene, she goes to Jake's apartment to apologize and say, I spoke to Joe. She told me everything. I'm so sorry. That is one redeeming quality that she does have, is she will apologize and she's not above admitting that she was wrong.
Yeah. And you know who should be pulling that Reed card right now? Like, hey, you need to trust me unconditionally now. Is Jake. this was Reed's suitcase right here. You know? This is the second time now that fucking Amanda has come at Jake.
Things.
Yeah, huge things. Your father is a crook. No, he's not. Get out of my, you're evicted. And then he is. And now it's, you don't understand, I'm helping Joe. No, you're not. You're cheating on me. And he's not. So now Jake needs to pull the Reed and be like, listen, trust me fucking 100%.
Well, he doesn't. He's like,
because he's stupid.
You've done a lot for Joe. She really appreciates you. And then they're back in each other's arms, rolling around on the couch, and everything's good again.
Yeah, it's all good. All good in the hood with old Jakey Poo. Now, someone's mom shows up.
And by looking at this mom, you know exactly whose mom she is.
Short hair, red, cut.
Exact same haircut.
Yeah.
They do look very similar.
It is the mom, Catherine Andrews, played by Gail Strickland. She is known she was on ER and Dallas. And I only bring up Dallas because I think, wasn't Heather Locklear on Dallas?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure she was.
So they're driving in Jane's Cabrio, and they got the top down, and they're really just kind of talking in disbelief about what's going on with Sydney, and that they both are shocked that she's going through with this marriage with Michael.
Mm-hmm. And they're just like, what should we do? I don't know. They just don't know.
Right. But the mom does pay Sydney a visit at the beach house. Now, Sydney has not told her parents that this is going down. This was something that Jane had called her mother, told her what was happening. And Catherine, their mom, took it upon herself to make the trip from Chicago to come out to see what the heck is happening.
Mm-hmm.
We go into the beach house where Sydney is using a hair dryer to dry the wedding dress.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, take it to a dry cleaner.
You ruined it. Now I got to blow dry it.
So when she answers the door,
would that work?
Probably not.
Would that like hurt the fabric?
No, I mean, the chlorine probably.
Because a wedding dress like that shouldn't get wet, right?
And not at all. And they're talking it's an heirloom. It's grandma's. I mean, if you think this is 93, the mom probably got married in late 60s, early 70s. The grandma probably got married in the 20s or 30s. I mean, this is an old dress.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows.
Because it's a doily.
Because it sucks. And you can imagine Sydney's surprise when she opens the door and sees her mother on the doorstep.
And she's like, Mommy, oh my gosh, thank you so much for coming. And she says this line. This is like, I was going to tell you, honest.
Sydney does that all the time. Whenever she's lying and she's trying to redeem herself, she always does that honest. Like, honest to God. Scouts honor.
What are you, Shirley Temple? Oh, gosh, gee, Willikers. Honest.
And she does say, you know, I can only imagine the lies that Jane is fabricating to you. It's been so crazy. Jane has been terrible since the moment I moved here. But her mom is not buying this. She knows Sydney. She knows Jane. And she knows that Sydney has gone off the deep end.
And what's the mom say? She's like, I know you're going to make a mess of this. It's what you do best.
Yes. So Sydney's explaining, look, Mom, after Michael and Jane divorced, we just fell in love. And she doesn't own the state of California. She doesn't own Michael. And her mother first is sympathetic toward
Sydney.
Yeah. Thank you. And she says, you know, Michael may just be taking advantage of you. Why don't you give it time? Why do you have to rush into this? Why get married now? I mean, if you are meant to be together, live together. Like, try it out a little bit. I just think this isn't a good way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sydney pretty much, like, goes back to her mom and says, like, no, this is what I want. We are meant to be together. This is it. And then that's when her mom delivers the line, well, fine, go ahead, make a mess of it. That's what you do best.
It's what you do best.
But then Sydney another delivers her own little zinger. Oh, wait. Then the mother says, tell me, how did I end up raising a foolish daughter like you? And then Sydney says, Mother, why don't you get back on your broom and fly back to Chicago?
Ooh. Because you just called your mom a witch.
Good work.
Honest.
Billy's at Escapade Magazine. So now we know that he has his job back.
Right.
This was something that was kind of like, we didn't get confirmation last episode. He just went to talk to Nancy. It wasn't really like said that they were going to actually have him back. But he's back in the office and he and Celia are kind of like going back and forth like they usually do.
Yeah, and he's bullshitting about jewelry. And he, of course, man, this is not a good look for any dude. You can't complain about the cost of rings, especially engagement rings, to others. It just makes you look cheap. And like they were trying to explain to Billy, it's not about the cost. But, like, if you love her, the cost shouldn't really matter, you know?
And, I mean, I think we can all say that maybe you don't have to spend a mint in order to get a ring. But maybe put a little bit of thought and time and care into selecting something that would be suitable for the person that you're going to propose to.
Yeah.
And he is saying, well, isn't this whole feminist thing saying it's not about the man bequeathing you some gift? It's all about being a union and making a partnership. And Celia does shoot it to him straight. He's like, listen, Campbell, get over yourself and you listen to me. The size of a woman's ring is directly proportionate to how she thinks you feel about her.
Which I get. I totally get. But look, you know, it's not for everybody. The whole wedding ring system. It's not for everybody.
But it is for Allison. We know Allison.
It's definitely for Allison.
She's traditional. And she wants...
They both have good jobs. You know, there's no reason why they can't afford a ring on a payment plan. Billy doesn't have a car. He doesn't have a car. Allison has a free car.
These are all crazy things.
Allison, all right, Allison doesn't have a car payment. Neither does Billy. Allison is still rocking that Jeep, which is a constant reminder to Billy. Think about that. I didn't even think about that. Allison has a brand new Jeep.
From Steve McMillan.
From Steve McMillan.
The man that she intended to leave Billy for.
Yeah, and Billy has to hop in that every day when
because
they go
Billy
somewhere.
Billy doesn't have a car.
Doesn't have a car. So, like, Billy, you can fucking afford a ring on a payment plan, man. Come on, dude. Like, get it together. And he's the one who calls Allison cheap. Remember the last episode?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, why are we in the park eating hot dogs? Oh, because you're cheap. No, motherfucker. You are. You are so cheap. I'm sorry. I got a little, like, kind of
You're
rant.
Really heated right now.
Well, I don't like the fact that Billy passes off. He brushes all of this and paints it with a I'm not sexist brush.
And but it's like really to disguise the fact that he sucks. He did not take any time to think about this. We know how this happened. He was on the street and he looked over at the closest vendor hawking like pieces of crap.
Exactly.
And he had a choice of three different rings. One was like a skull and one was made of
one was whalebone.
Ivory.
One was 100% illegal whalebone. And the other was this.
It was a skull.
Yeah. This was a placeholder ring. It was. Like, come
Billy
on,
Billy was not thinking it was, though. So thank goodness that Celia is there to set him straight.
Yes. Thank you, Celia.
Next up, Amanda's paying another visit to Joe, but this time it is to apologize for flying off the handle. Amanda wants to tell Joe that she went through a similar experience. She too was pregnant once and she was planning on raising the baby by herself. And she wants Joe to know that if she needs a shoulder to cry on, that she's there. And Amanda's like, Joe, will you let me be there for you?
Oh, God. I can't stand Amanda's I'm sorry and I care.
Which is so fake. And, you know, you did bring up a pretty good point. Allison is supposed to be her best friend.
Yeah, where's Allison in all of this? Ring shopping. She's ring shopping. And, I mean, like, all right. And Amanda looks at her and she's like, I wish you turned to me. Why the fuck would Joe turn to you?
Well, she did put up like $300,000 in bail for her.
If anyone hates Amanda, it's clearly Joe. Joe has not liked her from the start. Joe accused her of stealing Jake. Why on earth? Just because you had a miscarriage, that means we're abortion baby miscarriage pals? Like, I'm supposed to turn to anyone who's had a complication? No. You suck. That's why she doesn't turn to you.
It is a really weird situation if you step back and think, whoa, Joe and Jake were a couple for a while. And now they're just so comfortable just being like, oh, Jake is with Amanda now. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Why it's weird.
It is so weird.
The big day is here, guys. It's the wedding of Michael and Sydney.
Oh my God. There's a hell of a lot of chairs set up on the beach and no one's in them.
Completely empty. There's the officiant, there's Sydney and Michael, and there's Matt.
And Matt like strolls up and he's just there to like state the obvious. He's like a little nervous and he's like, guys, I don't think anyone's coming.
So Sydney basically says, well, I'm not going to let anyone ruin my special day. Why don't we go ahead? And then Michael looks at the officiant and says, can you give us a short version, please?
Mike, I have a note that Michael, this whole scene looks like Al Bundy. He's just like sitting there like.
And of course,
hand in his pocket.
Sydney is wearing the dress, the veil, all the accoutrement.
She's got it on.
She hair dried it all. And she's looking, I don't know what the word is.
Trash.
Like a piece of toilet paper.
Like Gina Davis in Beetlejuice. Here's something for you. All right, you're the officiant of this wedding. Clearly, there's no guests. This seems forced. This seems like a shotgun wedding of sorts. You can visibly see that the groom is not happy. Do you go through with this?
They paid you, sure.
You just marry him?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that against God?
He's non-denominational.
He looks denominational.
He does, but Sydney said that he's not.
He's wearing like religious
like
robes.
Like robes and sashes.
He has like a sparkle sash.
I know.
He has a big old sparkle sash.
Well, maybe he's with some.
I couldn't
like,
do it.
Obscure church.
I couldn't take their money. I have a short story. When I was a kid, I was getting piano lessons. I only got them because my older brother and my older sister were also getting piano lessons from this lovely woman named Alta. And we would go to her house and we would get the lessons. And I habitually would not practice. And I would come to her house, we'd put the music sheets on her on the piano, and she'd be like, "Okay, let's see what you learned." And I would just literally sit there on the bench and not know how to play.
Wait, so
one
would
note.
You just like pound on the keys and pretend like you knew what you were doing?
No. I'd just be there.
You wouldn't play anything?
Well, she'd be like, "All right, so what's this one?" And I'd be like, "Mm-hmm. B, F." And she's like, "Yep." So we hit that one. She'd be like, and it just got to a point. This was like very much later. At first, I really wanted to play. I knew kind of how to play. But long story short, she looked at me one day and was like, "You don't know any of this, do you?" And I was like, "Nah." And she's like, "Do you want to do this?" And I was like, "Not really." And she's like, "Well, I don't want to take your mother's money anymore." And I was like, "Yeah, that sounds fair." And that was my last piano lesson. But I bring that story up because if I'm the officiant, I'm my piano teacher there. And I'm like, look, I can't in good faith or judgment marry this couple that I know is not
well, the
working.
Difference is, Dan, is that she knew your family. She had seen you on several occasions. This is a dude that gets hired for a one-off. He's totally spent his entire day preparing for this. He sectioned off his time to be there.
Well,
he said no to maybe other couples who wanted to an officiant. So, yeah, you get paid for your time.
It's like if you're a birthday clown and you walk into the kids' party and all the kids are screaming bloody murder.
That's not your fault.
Do you continue the show?
Yes. And you say, "Give me my money. I showed up. I'm here. I want to get paid."
I don't know. Something as official as getting married, I don't know if I could do it.
Well, thank goodness you don't have to marry anybody anytime soon.
Yep. So they are getting married. He goes through with it.
They say the I do's. They kiss. And then Sydney hugs Michael and in his ear says, "I'm going to make you so happy. You'll see, darling.
You'll see, darling." And I wrote, now they're married and Sydney has nothing on him.
Pretty much.
She can't, now that they're married, she can't use that like, "I'm going to send you to jail."
Yeah.
That's
because
totally ruins
her
plan.
I don't think that you can, by law, testify against your spouse.
Really?
So there's some kind of weird thing about court, about something in court. I don't really know how that works, but I gotta say...
Yeah, she sort of played out her hand there because, I mean, you don't want your husband now in prison. What's the point of being married to him? You need him working.
Well, do you? Because now you're married to him, he goes to prison and you get the beach house.
But you need him making money. Yeah, who owns this beach house?
I think they're renting it.
And I think Jane's still getting half his fucking wages.
I think she is too. I think she is too. And I gotta say, my prediction didn't come true.
What?
I wanted Kimberly to like show up at the wedding. Like, nah. I wanted to be like, do you take this woman to be your, like,
stop!
Does anybody object? I object. And she, you turn like around walking, and she's like down the aisle.
Or she comes like walking out of the ocean. Naked, like Daenerys Targaryen. Fucking dragons on her.
Oh, that would be
awesome. She's back! She just starts breathing fire on them.
That would have been awesome. So yeah, I'm really saddened to not see the return of Kimberly Shaw this time around.
So it's their first night as husband and wife, and they're sleeping in bed together. And Michael, he wakes up for a midnight beer, as one does in the middle of the night.
Well, he wakes up. He gets out of bed, he looks at Sydney, and his fate is sealed. He's just like,
fuck my life.
Yeah, he's just like, no hope. He is just done. He goes to the kitchen and he gets a beer because there's really, what else do you do?
He cracks open the beer, takes a swig, and then he starts looking at the knives. And he grabs a butcher knife.
That looks like a mirror. It is like the shiniest knife I've ever seen in my life.
And he's just like sort of looking at it, sees his eyes in the knife. And my thought is like, is Michael jumping straight to murder now? Like, what the fuck?
And he's ready.
You yelled out, dream, dream. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're probably right.
Well, because the next, what we see next is Michael taking the knife, walking into the bedroom.
Yeah, this is right. You're like, dream.
Plunging the knife into sleeping Sydney, and just over and over again, and you see this gleeful smile on Michael's face.
Yeah.
And then Michael wakes up. It's been a dream all along, but he still has that same smile. Things are good.
And Sydney's like, what's up, baby? What's going on?
I just had the most marvelous dream. You know, I think that this is going to work. I want to take you on a honeymoon. Why don't we go on up to San Francisco, go up to NorCal and spend a long weekend? We'll leave tonight.
And Sydney's like, hell yeah.
Yeah, Sydney's like, finally, my plan is working. Yes!
Yeah, and we thought, oh, sweet, credits, but...
Yeah, I thought that's it. No, guys, there's more.
Yeah, there's more.
Jake and Amanda go to Joe's apartment to... wake her up. Today is the day of the procedure. They were going to go to the clinic with her while she has it done.
They're knocking on the door. Hey, Joe, come on. You're going to be late. And Jake has an inkling of like, he's like, I think I know where she is.
Right. So Joe's not coming to the door. She's nowhere to be found. Jake says, I'm going to go look for her. Amanda goes to follow him. And Jake goes, no, Amanda, you wait here to see if she comes back. And he just leaves. He doesn't tell her where he's going. He's just like gone.
Yeah, because she's a bitch.
So Amanda waits there at Joe's apartment to see if she comes back. And Jake's off. And he goes to the marina where he does find Joe just standing there looking off into the water.
And she's like, I've been here for hours. I remember Reed used to come out and grab me and say, you got to get out and smell the sunrise. Doesn't make any fucking sense, man. That is not the smell of a sunrise. That is the smell of ocean, seagulls, you know, morning dew. But sunrises have no scent.
Yeah, so Joe says to Jake, you know, I think there was a time that he loved me and I really loved him. And that's when this baby was conceived. That is it. And fate has asked me to dance, Jake, and I can't say no.
I mean, I kind of get it. Like, yeah, you guys were in love, you had sex a lot, and that was a happy time. But then you got gagged and thrown into a trap door where you likely peed and pooped your pants.
And
he was selling crack.
I mean, although...
So when you have that baby... Those are the moments you're going to think about when he when he karate sized the knife out of your fucking hand.
Or
when he tried to shoot you with a flare gun.
I don't know, Dan. I disagree, okay? Like, Joe delivers the most cliche line ever about Fate asking her to dance.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to see it from her perspective. She doesn't have any dating candidates. After this whole thing with Reed, how do you trust somebody again? How do you get into a new relationship? How old is Joe? We don't know. Is she mid-20s, late-20s? Is she going into 30s?
Oh, she's 30.
She is?
She's 33 or 34.
Really?
From her high school reunion.
What do you mean?
She was like, oh, it was 18 years ago.
No, I think it was 10.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
Well, then you're 28.
She's 28, yeah.
So you're 28 then. Yeah. Well, you know, you get older and you really start to contemplate these big things. If I get rid of this baby, will I have another opportunity?
Yes.
And will I regret this decision for the rest of my life? I know I want to be a mother and I'm going to be a damn good mother. That's what she says.
But those jeans. Those jeans.
You know?
She got them Reed greasy jeans.
Just because somebody's father is a bad person doesn't mean that they're going to be a bad person. I mean, he's half Reed, but he's...
No, but it doesn't. It probably means they're going to be
no!
a bad person.
That baby is innocent and that baby has nothing to do with the dad. And I fully support a woman's choice to choose. And I think if Joe really was like without a shadow of a doubt, this is the right decision. I cannot have this baby. Of course, I think that would be the right thing to do. But if you're contemplating it, you're going back and forth, it's keeping you up at night, you're really weighing the pros and cons, and you've come to the decision, I want to have this child, then you got to go for it and you've got to commit and just say, I'm going to live this truth. I'm going to tell the kid everything. And that's life. And maybe that kid will go on to cure cancer. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe, but probably not. Probably they might be on a path to maybe curing cancer down the road, but the second you cue them in to, oh, by the way, I shot your dad in the chest on a boat where we were selling crack or cocaine.
It was coke, okay? That's yeah. A little bit more highfalutin.
Because it's going to make it into the country anyway. That's what your old Paul dad used to say. Anywho, we go to the grossest scene of the episode. and who's right at the center of the grossest scene ever? Probably Melrose Place's grossest couple. Allison and Billy. Allison's at home cooking din din. She's like shaking pepper and oregano into some pot Billy's like, oh, what you making? She's like, well, we were going to go out to dinner, but I didn't know when you were going to get home, so I'm making leftovers. What?
And then he goes, well, what is it?
She's like, spinach lasagna and corned beef hash you made 3 days ago mushed together. Excuse me? Jenny, if you said these things to me, I would say, stop what you're doing right fucking now. Are you... out of you. Goddamn mind.
Oh, believe me, I know this would never fly.
I would just look at you with a tear in my eye and be like, why? Why did you put those things together, baby?
Yeah, it really does sound like a very strange combo. I don't know why
you... Corned beef hash and lasagna. And the corned beef hash is 3 days old. That is a fucking crime against humanity.
Well,
and she's like, close your eyes. I'd be like, no. I'd be like, Jenny, no, I can't play this game.
She gives him a spoonful of her little concoction.
Ugh.
And he loves it. Delicious. Yeah, it
tastes really good. From the guy who eats jars of peanut butter all day.
But then he says, now you close your eyes.
And she does. And boom, he put a ring on it.
And the good ring, the one that they saw at the store that she really liked.
Right. And she immediately takes off her other ring and puts it with the other bottle openers. Oh, man.
It's gorgeous. And then he says, yeah, I know, you deserve it. And Allison again is like, well, I agree, we can't afford it. How are we going to do this? And he's like, you know what, Allison, it doesn't matter. You deserve to have this beautiful ring and blah, blah, blah. But you just can't leave me until the ring is paid for.
I think that the spinach lasagna and the corned beef, 3-day-old corned beef hash, is a metaphor for Allison and Billy's relationship.
How so?
They just mash it together. It's sort of thrown in, and you see it. You see what sticks. You throw it on the wall, see what sticks. That's their relationship.
Well, hopefully we don't. Well, can we have something like a bombshell drop on them where something terrible explodes in their relationship and then they're not together anymore? Please, yeah, God.
Please. I want him to hook up with Celia.
I really feel...
Allison brings lunch. Hey, remember you said you didn't want hot dogs in the park anymore? I brought this beautiful picnic. Oh my God, you're fucking Celia.
That would be a really great little plot twist.
Yeah. So... We thought credits after this for sure.
Yeah.
But nope. We go to another scene. Michael and Sid are packed. They're ready for their honeymoon. And Matt's there?
Why is Matt there?
He's like their lurch.
He's like a butler.
Yeah. He's like, hey, Matt, I'm going to tell on you. That's all they say to him. He's like, okay, I'm there. He like packed their bags.
What did he even do?
He like packed their bags for them.
And he's loading them into the car.
Yeah.
And Sydney's like, come on, Michael. We're late. Let's go. It's time to leave.
He's like, yeah, 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 hon. I'll be right there. Hey, just, I got to go tell him I'm going to murder you.
And then he looks at Matt and says, say goodbye to Sydney, Matt.
And Matt like has no idea how to process that information. He's just like, oh. You're going to murder her?
Yeah, he knows it's something.
Do I got to cover this one up too?
There's trouble afoot.
Fucking poor Matt, man. He's like, I was just trying to, you know, marry a Russian and raise a kid together.
And look what trouble he's into now.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, that is really the end of the episode.
Yeah.
So let's recap. What happened?
Joe is knocked up.
Billy upgrades Allison's ring.
Sydney and Michael get married.
Jane and Sid have an epic battle in the pool with Grandma's wedding dress.
And Michael is going to try murder. Just to see how it fits.
Yeah. Good stuff. So 90s moments, what you got?
90s moments, I've got officiant sparkle robes.
Oh,
that thing sparkled. Like, guys, rewatch that part. He is shining. Should
shining.
Be on. I'm so shiny.
We watch Moana every day of our lives.
Yeah.
Mine is the breakfast tray and the whole concept of having breakfast in bed.
Yeah, I have that too.
Like, in the 90s, I feel like that was like, oh, a luxury, breakfast in bed. I think about breakfast in bed now and I'm like, absolutely not.
It'd be very hard to do.
Don't bring
and manage
breakfast into my bedroom.
Yeah. And then that, when you have to get up and pee or something, like, you got to pick up the whole tray.
You need assistance.
Yeah, food.
And that specific tray, my family had that.
Mm-mm.
We had that same exact tray.
Not into it.
That was like the thing. We'd always make my mom breakfast in bed for Mother's Day.
And you know she'd be like, God damn it, I gotta pee. I got all this food on me. And I got jelly on the sheets.
Little crumbs everywhere.
What the fuck? I'm gonna get ants.
She would never say that.
Sydney's blow dryer. It looks like a Barbie blow dryer.
Yeah.
It just has such a long nozzle and such a big round center. I feel like the blow dryers nowadays have gotten a lot more smaller and compact and like
sleeker.
Yeah, this thing looks like a futuristic gun or something.
The reference to Princess Caroline.
Yeah. Hand delivering invitations.
I don't think that was a 90s thing. I think that Sydney's just crazy.
Maybe.
Sydney has a line where she says, "It's like a remake of a movie that's only a few years old." Whereas that notion is very 90s because today, I mean, they remake movies every couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, Spider-Man.
Richard in our Facebook group, he said, talk about when Sid talks about guests coming to a wedding being like a remake of a movie that's only a few years old. Yep.
Really?
Yeah. And he said that has become a horrible modern reality.
It's so true.
Yeah.
It is so true. I mean, they do that all the time.
Yeah.
But back in the 90s, the thought of that was like, nope. Why would we remake that? It's been a couple years.
You're like, oh, yeah, we got to. We must.
Having a message be delivered to you at dinner by someone working at the restaurant. Having to call a restaurant to tell a patron there what's going on.
Yeah, that'd be a text. That'd be a text today, for sure.
The wedding dress itself.
Yeah.
That is terribly 90s.
Nobody's wearing that.
That's awful.
Yeah, that's bad.
What if your mom wore that and she's like, you know, I really want you to wear my wedding dress on your big day?
I'd be like, sorry, Mom.
I would throw up on it. So bad.
You would like accidentally ruin it.
Oh, sorry, Mom. So sorry. I fell in the pool.
The D&D boss's wife at dinner. After seeing her, she's got to be a 90s moment. She looks like a wax museum of Marilyn Monroe.
She really does.
What the fuck is she doing? What are you
and
doing?
And it really makes you second guess like Bruce. Like, yeah. What's his personal life like?
Mail order.
The whole idea of leaving a number with someone when you go away to be like, oh, this is the hotel I'm staying at. Here's their phone number for the hotel.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that is very 90s.
Yeah, like I think you go away now and you're just like, oh, I'm going to Arizona or wherever you're going. And like, no one even knows
ta-ta.
What city, where, why you're going,
will
what
you
hotel.
Check my mail? Check my mail while I'm out.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Will you feed my dogs?
Okay, so all of these episodes have a lesson. Daniel, what did you learn?
My lesson is mind your motherfucking business.
That's is that directed lesson. Toward Amanda?
Yeah. Yeah, it's directed to a lot of people. Amanda, for sure, 100%. Mind your business. Because you had nothing to do with Joe. Joe's going through some shit. Fine. Mind your business. Once you learn that she was pregnant, talk to Jake. That's it. Don't come back up there and be like, I'm upset you didn't come to me. What?
How is this about you?
Yeah, it is. It is pretty, pretty dumb. Pretty dumb. So yeah, mind your business.
My lesson is give people notice for your wedding day. Yeah. She's hand delivering these invitations, and I think the wedding day was the next day or the day after the next day.
That's probably why she had to hand deliver them, because the post office
couldn't get there
in time. Yeah.
That's exactly why.
Is it time?
For
Bitch of the week!
I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss ass bitch, bitch.
So, last week, guys, I picked Allison as Bitch of the Week. Jenny, you picked Amanda, and because of a compelling argument by yours truly, Allison's the bitch of the week, 65% of the vote.
Well, I gotta hand it to you, Dan. You really did lay out a great argument.
I spun that one, baby.
I think a lot of people, even in our Facebook group, there was a lot of talk. Vivian was totally on board with you.
Thanks, Viv.
I think we can say Amanda's always the bitch for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta hand this one to you. Good job.
Thank you.
As the reigning champion, who is your nomination for this week?
My bitch of the week this week, I'm going to throw a curveball, just like I did with Amanda last week, Allison last week, is Michael Mancini.
What?
Michael's the bitch. Michael is the bitch of the week. Do you know why? Here's why. Michael, this has been a long time coming, but you should be super cool with this. You should just like this, bro. Sydney is hot. I've said it before. She is a top 10 hooker of all of Los Angeles.
Top 20.
Top 20. She knows what she's doing in the bedroom. She loves you unconditionally. Michael Mancini, no one else loves you, period. This woman will do whatever you want, whenever you want. She cooks you great breakfast, fantastic breakfast, and you flip it over? Come on, man. Come on. If you hate Jane as much as you say you do, marrying Sydney is the best thing that you could do to get back at her. Come on, dude. What are you doing? What are you doing, Michael? Now you're gonna go on a honeymoon and kill her? What kind of sense is that, man? Just be married to her. Your love, Kimberly, is dead. You live in her house, I think for free. Sydney got you your job back. Sydney got you back in the good graces with Lemon, or whatever the hell his name is. Levin?
Levin.
Is it Levin? Yeah. It's not Lemon.
This isn't 30 Rock.
You know, what has she really done to F you up? She just wants to be loved. Love her. You were drunk as hell on pills, trying to beat down Jane's door. She took you in. She kept you safe, man. You're being a super bitch right now, Michael.
Okay. I like it.
Thank you.
Now, my first instinct was to go with Amanda because, again, she could be the bitch of every episode. And there was a lot of things to back that up. But I got to go with my gut. I got to go with Sydney.
Ooh.
Sydney is the biggest bitch of this entire episode. Guys, she's marrying her sister's husband. That overall should trump everything else. But not only that, she goes into Jane's home after Jane has made it very clear that she's not welcome there. She steals the dress by putting it all on. And then because of her, the dress is pretty much ruined because she decided to put it on, model it in Jane's bedroom, and then Jane walks in and then they have the little tiff. They both go into the pool.
Yep.
Then the whole deal with her mom was cool about this, you know? I think her mom approached it in a really kind of neutral way to say, you know, give it some time. If you are really meant to be with Michael, why do we have to get married now? I mean, any other mom could be like, what you're doing is insane. You need to stop. You should not marry your sister's husband. This is awful. But her mom was cool with her, and she totally just turned on her mother on a dime and was like, get out of my life.
Mm.
And then she goes through with the whole marriage thing and she wonders, oh, why doesn't Jane give me her blessing? It's like, Sydney, you do need psychiatric attention. You are a total bitch. And everything that you've done, everything is a culmination to just hurt your poor sister, Jane. You suck. You're a bitch. But I love you because you're awesome. And don't stop. Don't ever stop. But you're the bitch.
And be on our podcast.
Be on our podcast.
All right. Well, as always, every week you can join our Facebook group and vote there or vote on Twitter or do both if you really feel that passionate about it. At Melrose Pod.
This episode was named Otherwise Engaged.
Yes. This is a terrible name.
Dan, what are you going to name it?
I'm renaming this one Only Fools Rush In. And that goes for Joe, Billy, Amanda, and Sydney. Amanda rushed in.
Hey, what's going on here? Why are you cheating on me with Joe?
She rushed in there. Sydney rushing into this wedding. Now she's off to get murdered. Joe rushing into this baby. Think about it. Abort. Billy rushing into this wedding, buying that piece of shit garbage ring. Now you're making up for it, shoving corned beef hash down your throat.
Ew.
with spinach lasagna. Don't do it, Allison. Don't do it. Allison. Don't marry that guy. That's mine. How about you?
My title is Unholy Matrimony. For obvious reasons.
Unholy Matrimony. Sounds like a mattress store.
Okay.
Unholy Matrimony.
Okay, so predictions. What do we think is going to happen?
I got one big prediction.
Say it.
I think Kimberly is going to arrive when Michael and Sydney return from this botched murder.
I hope so.
And she'll
Louise, she'll
just be in the beach house when they get back.
That would be awesome.
Like, they come back and they're just like, oh, well, let's just get some sleep. And she's just in there. Like, Michael, it's so good to see you.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think I agree. Of course, Michael's attempt to kill Sydney is going to backfire in some way. Sydney's going to get wise to it and be like, now, Michael, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Because remember, I'm going to go to the police and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, old song and dance.
Mm-hmm.
Sydney's definitely not going to get murdered. And I think Joe's got to keep the baby because we've already gone down this road before. I'm going to get an abortion. Oh, I had a miscarriage. I'm pregnant. I had a miscarriage. We can't have any more miscarriages and abortions.
I don't. That the only thing there is, I don't remember her being pregnant.
Well, Dan, know? Just because you don't remember it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
That's true.
I think she's keeping it. I think she's having that kid. And I firmly believe that Allison and Billy are not going to get married.
They can't.
Something is going to come in between them. Maybe it is Celia. I hope it is. But knowing Allison, she's going to meet another guy that she takes a shine to. And she's probably going to make Billy play second fiddle like she does every time. Mm-hmm. And hopefully Billy is going to finally say, I've had enough. I'm done doing this.
Yeah. Hope so. They can't go on. We have some activity in our lovely Facebook group that you all should be in because it's awesome and everyone who's cool is in it. I think I'm saying this right. Carly wrote that she's been binge listening at work and she's trying to get caught up to us. But where she's at in this series is season 1, episode 12. But hopefully she'll be caught up soon and where we are in the series. And she's going to do some binge watching this week.
So nice.
Happy binge watching. Can't wait till you get to this episode.
Yeah, I was like, Carly, you're probably not going to hear this until another like month or two. But we really love you and we're really happy you're watching and listening.
Binge on. And thanks for listening and watching with us. Richard again, he wrote, by this point, it was kind of weird to see Jane and Michael happily walking down the street with the gang in the opening credits.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah, they're just
that
like
is
playing.
A really good point. Ooh. And then, like, when is Sydney gonna get her own turn around, look at the camera? I have my name.
I think she gets it now.
She doesn't have it now.
Oh, she's still guest star, Sydney. Maybe season 3.
No, she doesn't even have a looking at the camera.
No.
It's not just yet. Laura Layton.
Yeah.
Like it post-credits. Yeah. She doesn't have, like, I don't know what those are called, but, like, an actual, like, hi, I'm looking at the screen now. Yeah.
She needs her a fridge open thing. He says, also, I'm sure you know, we didn't, but he says, I'm sure you know, but the D&D building was the old Spelling Television headquarters. And he ran in there in 1995 while visiting L.A., and they gave him a signed cast photo.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And he also commented, and Joe, back to work pretty quick in this episode.
Yeah, we have to agree with you. What is up with that?
If you kill someone on a boat,
you take a week.
At least a week. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, like Dan said, if you're not in the group, we really encourage you to join. If you are totally into Melrose Place and you want to learn more about the characters and have little fun little tidbits of info like that, there's a ton more that goes on. Lots of fun photos and our friend who's always posting TV guides.
Anthony Farrell, who runs the Laura Layton fan club.
Yeah.
And the Laura Layton fan page.
He's got some wonderful photos of old TV guides that have hilarious ads from the show. And it's just a cool place to connect with other people that are in love with Melrose Place and just, you know, chat about it.
This ad is Sydney never met a married man she didn't like. This season, we're living up to our reputation. Melrose Place, new at 7.
That was on at 7 p.m.
I guess in Texas, yeah.
I mean, this is a show that I think's got to be in 9 or 10 o'clock slot.
Yeah. Carly again wrote, I'm so stupidly giddy that I found this podcast yesterday. I watched Melrose Place when I was 10. I know. Until I was probably 14. Then when it was on Netflix a few years ago, I decided to binge it all. I'm currently on my second go around binge watching on Hulu, and this podcast is my new favorite thing.
Woo!
Yeah.
Well, we can't thank you guys enough for just supporting us and listening to us. And if you want to support us financially, we are always happy to take a buck, take a couple of bucks.
Give us a buck.
Come on, give us a buck. Go to Patreon. We do have exclusive content for our Patreon supporters. We are working to try to get some merch for you guys. And we're getting there, but we do need a little bit more support to make it happen.
Patreon.com/MelrosePod. Do it. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, @MelrosePod. Hit us up there. You can email us your Melrose Pod, your Melrose Place journey. MelrosePod@gmail.com.
We love smut.
And we love you.